Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN1050.
Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes, Gord Miller, Dave Poulin. You're listening to TSN1050.
We're keeping tally here.
Gord pumping
whoever's
his fist.
Whoever's music he leads with, you know what name he's going to say. That was your
music. That's my walk-up
song. That's your walk-up song?
Yeah.
I saw that out of the peripheral vision, too, the fist pump. Gord gets his name before Pooley. So Mark Zucchino in studio at 5:30, and we'll start to get you set for the Open Championship at Carnoustie.
Covered three of those. Loved it. Loved covering the Open.
That wouldn't suck.
It's a great event because it's just so much more free flow than a lot of the North American golf events, which are very controlled and very restricted. First of all, they have no limit on ticket sales. So they sell grounds passes and away you go.
The problem they didn't go back to Carnoustie for a long time was because they had no way to control any of the crowd.
Yeah.
They just wandered in from wherever.
Ben Hogan apparently went by there on a train and said, why did they abandon that golf course?
That was before he won.
Yeah.
He opened there.
But it's an amazing, Tiger at St. Andrews in 2000 was phenomenal. I was at Royal Lytham in St. Anne's, Muirfield. It's just a great, because they don't have to trick up the golf course. It really bugs me that the USGA, tries to trick up these great golf courses and make them so hard, make it a great examination of golf. And it turns into watching a guy write an examination.
Well, this one will be tricked up this weekend by the weather. I've played there on a very windy day at Carnoustie. It's unbelievable.
And I have too.
It's so much fun.
So the superintendent at Carnoustie told me one time, we asked him about the 99 Open, right? When Vandeveld blew up. And I said, how would you rate the, because there was a lot of complaints. He says, oh, it was ideal. It was ideal. He says, the Americans?
You're going with your accent.
Are you trying to do the Scottish thing?
The Americans hated it. The Europeans hated it. Says, a Scotsman won it. A Frenchman was embarrassed. It was perfect.
Ding, ding, ding. Perfect. All boxes checked.
That was Paul Laurie.
Yeah.
See, I never.
And people forget. If remember Justin Leonard?
He was in the playoff as well.
There's no playoff if he doesn't go for the 17th. He goes for the 17th off the tee. You could reach it. It was penal. And he actually took a bogey. If he didn't take that bogey, there's no playoff.
It's crazy.
You guys remember all this detail
about
these tournaments.
That's a special golf course, though. That's when you play it, and then you watch, like, when you watch it, when I watch it this weekend, you're reliving every shot in Hogan's Alley. You're totally involved.
When Zucchino gets in here, you should ask him at some point about my golf game.
Why?
Just glowing reviews. I can promise you.
Are you good?
Fantastic.
Are you?
Probably better than you, Gord. And I say that with extreme confidence and not a hint of BS.
Sarcasm?
Not a hint
really?
Of BS.
Not a hint.
Not a hint of BS.
Really?
Yeah, when Zucchino gets in, he'll tell you. He might tell you that I put a few in the backyards of some neighbors of the Hunt Club a few summers ago, but I'll just tell you I was aiming there anyway. So we'll see how that plays out. Zucchino will join us in studio at about 5:30. Brian Windhorst of ESPN coming up in just a couple of minutes. The Raptors, the lead dog in the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes, which, okay, here's the thing. Based on what I've been reading, it's felt like the Raptors have been the lead dog for a week and a half, 2 weeks now. This can keeps getting kicked down the road. It's a broad conversation because of the year that Kawhi Leonard just had, which is to say, he didn't have one. He played 9 games for the Spurs. He had an injury to his quad, which he felt the organization mistreated, misdiagnosed, and I think a lot of people in the Spurs organization believe he kind of kicked the season. He claims, hey, I missed the rest of the year because I was hurt. I was off getting treatment, trying to get this thing better. So you have questions about his health. You have questions about where his headspace is at. And you know that he has made it clear, typically through his vessels, because Kawhi is not a guy who says a lot himself. You don't hear him speak a lot. That he wants to play in Los Angeles either for the Lakers or the Clippers, and he's a free agent next summer. So if the Raptors are going to acquire him, you're only guaranteed 1 year, and you don't even know what that year's going to look like.
The biggest red flag for me, didn't get along with Greg Popovich.
Oh, I think there's others that don't get along with Greg Popovich.
How many?
I think there are. You talk about a controlled locker room. We were talking about locker rooms earlier. When you had the right people in David Robinson and Tim Duncan in that locker room, you control that locker room.
Yeah, it's kind of like Belichick.
It never got to Pop.
Belichick and the Patriots, kind of a similar situation, consistent success over two-plus decades.
You weren't allowed to. It wasn't a factor.
Okay. All right, Brian Windhorst of ESPN joins us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Brian, thanks for your time this afternoon. What's the, as you understand it, very latest on the Kawhi Leonard situation and where the Raptors fit into all of this?
Well, this is not one of these things that moves fast or slow. The Spurs have full control over this. Kawhi is, is not a free agent. Technically, they don't really have to trade him if they want to trade him until February. And considering they still have in their pocket, if they want to offer the largest contract in the history of the NBA, they theoretically could roll the dice on this until next July. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No. But it's important to understand that the Spurs control the pacing here. And as far as the Raptors are concerned, some things have fallen into their favor. The teams that initially that would make interest, have interest in Kawhi, have not been willing to pay the price that the Spurs are asking for. When you're talking about the Lakers, that's a guy like Brandon Ingram. Talking about the Sixers, that's a guy like Markelle Fultz. The Celtics, a guy like Jaylen Brown. Basically, premium young prospects. That's what the Spurs want. None of those teams, because of Kawhi's uncertain health status and because of his contract status, are willing to offer that. And in the absence of that, the Raptors have moved in. Because the Raptors have everybody on the – there isn't anybody on the roster, the Raptors roster right now, who is not available in trade. Now, to be clear, that doesn't mean that they're actively shopping them. That's an important distinction to make in the NBA. But the Raptors aren't protecting anybody. The Raptors, I think, have a shorter timeline for this particular team than the Sixers or the Celtics do, which makes them more motivated to make a deal. And they don't, they also have an Eastern Conference that they see opening up here. They are motivated to take advantage of this window right now. And so they've made an offer to the Spurs. The Spurs, it's really, as far as I know, the most compelling offer that the Spurs have right now. And I think right now they're the only team that's really actively in discussions. Now, the key I'm going to say there is right now, because things change very rapidly. And you know, the Celtics have sort of stayed on the periphery here. They could jump in at the last minute and probably outbid everybody. But right now, I think the Raptors are there. I think the Raptors are what the Spurs have on their plate right now. And it's a question of whether or not they pull the trigger or whether they stay patient. But if they pull the trigger, he's going to be a Raptor.
Brian, just based off what you said there, now a two-part question from previously, just a one-part. Are you comfortable at all throwing names out there who may have been offered up if you're familiar with the situation? And number two, which was my original question, is the relationship between Kawhi and the Spurs so irreparably broken that there is no way he is there in San Antonio long term?
I'm not going to say what I've heard in terms of who's available, because that's very dangerous. But if you're a Raptors fan, you would probably have a pretty good idea of what the offer would have to be. As for the second part, that to me, this whole thing is a bunch of giant unknowns. We don't really know how Kawhi's health is. We don't really know what his intentions would be if he was traded somewhere other than Los Angeles, really traded anywhere. And we don't know whether the Spurs have 100% decided he's going to get traded. From what I understand, the relationship is not in a good place. From what I understand, the meeting with Greg Popovich that he had with Kawhi, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago now in San Diego, did not bear fruit. And so, therefore, I think at this point, the most likely thing is that he is no longer a San Antonio Spur. And I also think it's interesting that Kawhi, as far as I know, still hasn't been offered the $221 million by the Spurs. And that says a lot to me about where the two sides are. And so if the Raptors and all the other teams who are interested in trading for him would love to have ironclad answers on all these things, I don't think they're going to be available. I think this is going to be a genuine risk trade. But to get a player like this, to arguably get the most talented player who would have ever played for the Raptors, if he's healthy, I don't know if he's healthy, but he would be the most talented. I mean, he's an MVP candidate, finals MVP. As far as I know, he's never had a Raptor like that.
So, Brian, I guess...
To get that type of player, you have to take some risks.
So, Brian, you talk to people around the NBA. Are they surprised that the Raptors would be doing this to go after a player who you probably would only have for 1 year, who played 9 games last year, who we're not sure is healthy? I mean, it seems like an enormous risk. What do basketball people say?
Well, they look at the Raptors and they say, what's the lifespan of this competition, of them being a competitive team? Is it longer than 1 year right now? How do we feel about where Kyle Lowry is going to be in a year from now? How do we feel about the young players? How do we feel about Serge Ibaka? This may be the window. This may be it. And if you hit all the high marks, you may be able to keep Kawhi. Who's to say that he won't fall in love with Toronto? There are some players who absolutely fall head over heels in love with the city. Other players who are not. It's very hard to read Kawhi. This is another thing. If you think you're going to sit down and have a meeting with Kawhi Leonard and him give you a lucid, well-rounded, deep, meaningful answer about what his future is going to be, that's just not the case. That's not who he is. This may be the moment, and this is what Masai, I'm sure, is thinking about. I'm sure this is what he and Bobby Webster and Nick Nurse are talking about. Is this the moment? Because what if this team had to start a rebuilding cycle in a year and a half? Would they have maximized everything they would have had or not? I mean, the question you asked is a great question. It doesn't have a firm answer. And that's why it's hard to be in these jobs. But to win a championship, you're going to have to upgrade your talent. I don't think the Raptors are a championship team right now. I think they're a great team. They've got a lot going for them. I don't think they're a championship team. They need an upgrade in talent. This would be a type of move that could potentially upgrade their entire situation.
With Brian Windhorst of ESPN, you're listening to Overdrive, TSN 1050.
This seems to be, Brian, really fraught with red flags from every different angle, from a Raptors standpoint, from the communication to the injury to every single aspect. It's almost like they're the last man standing, and that's why they may end up with them.
That may be one of the reasons why the bargaining may be difficult, because the Raptors may not be inclined to give what the Spurs want. And, there could be 15 different reasons why this deal wouldn't come off. And one of the reasons could be, hey, the Raptors are like, listen, we're not going to be the ones bidding against ourselves out here. That could be a big factor in it. I agree. I'm not advocating for one way or the other. I'm just telling you the Raptors are there. The Raptors are deep in this thing. This is a legitimate thing. And again, it's not a matter of whether or not they pull the trigger. It's not like it's a situation where it's sitting there on the table and it's just a matter of Masai making the phone call or sending the text from Kenya. Well, he had a very important day today with Barack Obama. It's all shades of gray. It's also about the Spurs. The Spurs have control here. So it's not, I know that the desire because the human mind wants to compartmentalize when you want to get a whiteboard and do pros and cons, but all of that stuff is muddled in this situation. It's a very difficult situation. The Spurs are trading a damaged asset here, but it's the most valuable thing that they've got, and they're going to want the highest price from it. I mean, put yourself in their shoes. So this is, I really don't know how this is going to go. But the last 10 days, as I've talked to sources, it's really pointed that the Raptors right now are the team who's facing the Spurs in these talks.
Brian, I don't recall a lot of players having trouble with Greg Popovich over the years. I'm sure there's been some, and maybe you can enlighten us. But what is the issue between Kawhi Leonard and Greg Popovich?
Guys, I don't have solid answers on what happened here. It seems to me that there was a disagreement.
We have him? If Brian, if you're there, we'll just endeavor to reconnect.
There was a disagreement about?
About? Da-da-da-da. Well, see, this is...
I think it was about the injury and him getting treatment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Away from.
Now, yeah. Zach Lowe...
It's tense.
Zach Lowe's podcast is where Brian... And I understand he doesn't want to divulge sources or divulge names because it might be taken out of context. But Zach Lowe, whose podcast Brian appeared on, suggests it's DeRozan, Siakam, and a first-rounder to get Kawhi. So... I mean, that's from Zach Lowe, so just throwing it up.
You're changing your team dramatically, and you're choosing to do it a year or two earlier. You're changing it.
All right, Brian, you were just in the middle of the answer there. Maybe you can pick it up
on
whatever the issue may be between Pop and Kawhi.
Well, we at ESPN did a story. Ramona Shelburne led the reporting, where she described how there is a disagreement over what the injury actually was. The Spurs felt it was one thing and made it clear that he was cleared to play. And Kawhi's doctors thought it was something else and said, you can't play. And remember, we just saw a guy, Isaiah Thomas, who was told by team doctors, you can play. He played, and it might have cost him $100 million. So this is not a toughness thing. This is a protect yourself thing. So the injury is one situation. Then you have how the team handled it. The team took regular pot shots at him, not just Greg Popovich, who took pot shots at him, but also players on the roster, Ginobili, Tony Parker.
Right.
They had this contentious team meeting, which I don't know how you can ever have something contentious with Kawhi Leonard. He doesn't really emote.
Doesn't say anything.
So there's all kinds of things here, and I've covered the NBA. This is my 16th season. I've seen lots of star players get traded. Sometimes I thought they had good reasons. Sometimes I thought they had bad reasons, but you could always sort of figure it out. This is different. It's very difficult to get your hands around it, which is why this has been so frustrating and difficult for the Spurs.
Yeah, it's a strange story. Brian, here's another thought, and I don't know if this is a question that can get answered, but is there significant enough value in acquiring a player who could, not will, but could help you get or give you a better chance to get to the NBA Finals when you're probably going to get to the NBA Finals and get your ass kicked anyway?
See, here's the world that I live in. I respect the organizations that have the cojones,
mm-hmm.
Okay? You look at the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets are saying, we're not afraid. We're going to play to win. Boston Celtics, we're not afraid. We're going to play to win. Okay? I respect that. They're going to potentially have losses because of it. They're going to swing and miss. They're going to open themselves up to problem. But you've got like 22 teams out there, give or take, who are playing it safe. And if the whole league's playing it safe, maybe aggression is the thing that gets rewarded. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. I wish I could tell you, well, this is going to happen and this is going to happen. But this is what you're weighing if you're Masai Ujiri. He has capital. If he goes all in here and it doesn't work out, I don't think people are going to be calling for his head. Maybe I'm wrong, but he's got capital to use here. And he's got to decide whether this is the moment or not. I mean, his star players are aging, you know? Is this the moment? I don't have an answer, but I respect the organizations who play with guts. And a lot of times it's rewarded. Most of the time it's rewarded in one way or another. So you ask a Raptors fan, would they love to have a chance to get to the finals to play the Warriors? I have a hard time believing the answer would be no.
Fair point. I was thinking long term, but as you said, hey, if you're going into a rebuild anyway, why not take your shot? Really appreciate your keen insight. We thank you for this, and we'll catch up again soon.
Take care, guys.
Brian Windhorst of ESPN joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com.
It's such an incredibly delicate balance. I mean, they're at a tipping point of something, whatever that
is. But Pooley, like from your management background, you would know that if Kawhi Leonard is acquired by the Toronto Raptors, Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster are satisfied that whatever physical ailment there was, there is, has dissipated enough that they believe he will be ready for training camp and will be ready to contribute when the season starts.
Yeah, and I'm concerned with a player that takes the injury side of it outside the team and says, no, that's where it's really hard. No, that's not the injury I have. I'm not playing.
Here's what is sad for me, and this is not the Raptors' responsibility. It's not. If DeMar DeRozan is part of this deal, it would make yet another Toronto athlete who started his career with a team, was great, and finished somewhere else. The only athlete I can think of in the last 25 years in Toronto who spent his whole career here and was great was Pinball. Beyond that, all the great Blue Jays played somewhere else. All those Jays from the 90s played somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Doug Gilmore played somewhere else. Wendell Clark moved on, came back.
And Daryl Sittler.
Matt Sundin was a Nordique.
You got to go back with the Leafs to like George Armstrong to find a guy who played his whole career with the Leafs.
It's so hard in sport now to do that, but you're right.
It is, but Yzerman did it.
There are now going to be people doing it.
Matthews will do it.
The way the NHL is structured now.
Matthews will do it, okay. Gord, I promise.
Okay, fair enough. But don't you find that like it's unfortunate
it
in
is.
Toronto. Like I
yeah.
Like, well, who's the greatest Raptor? You can argue. I think it's DeRozan, but you could say Vince. Some people might say Vince,
who left.
If you're talking about impact on the game and just putting Toronto on the map, then that would be Vince. But I agree with you. I'm going with DeRozan.
Tracy McGrady was a good Raptor. Chris Bosh was a good Raptor. But
McGrady wasn't here long enough.
Not long enough.
There was Bosh.
They left. So, I mean, wouldn't it be great? And like I say, the Raptors have an obligation to do what's best for their team. But I would just love to see a Toronto athlete start and finish a great career here.
And with basketball, you can build around a guy. You could rebuild this team and keep a player like DeMar.
Well, the question becomes, can you build around DeMar DeRozan? That's you have to answer that question.
He can be a part of it.
Like here's perhaps an oversimplified comment, but I'll throw it out there. In an era that demands three-point shooting, for a shooting guard, that is an aspect of DeMar's game that has developed slightly somewhat, but not near enough.
The three-point shot is everything now, right? It's the whole game.
He doesn't really have a three-point shot. He's better than he was a couple years ago. He's worked at it, but it's not a big part of his game. And at 28, 29 years old, what are you expecting a guy to become at this point?
So I'm not asking the Raptors not to make this deal for sentiment's sake, and I'm not asking them to take a bullet for Toronto and be the team that keeps a guy.
Yeah, just making an observation.
But I would say this. I don't like the idea of going all in on Leonard. If you're going all in, you better be sure.
Well, you have to be sure. But if he is healthy and he is mentally engaged.
But if he didn't want to play.
He is as good as it gets in
Scott,
that run below KD and LeBron.
If he didn't want to play last year because he might have been hurt, what's he going to do in his free agency?
What has changed?
Well, what's going to happen?
That better be a big question.
As Brian pointed out, I mean, there's hundreds of millions of dollars at stake here.
Yeah, he's due 22 and change.
Yeah.
This year. What was the other deal?
221.
That only the Spurs can give him.
That only the Spurs can give him. The max deal.
There's over $150 million out there for him somewhere.
Yeah, there are a lot of cap implications about how much money an acquiring team could give him if they acquired him now versus acquiring him later. It's all...
Yeah, but I'm just saying...
That thing is a textbook, that NBA CBA. Crazy.
Yeah, I just... Man, you had 59 wins last year. I mean, it wasn't... You got beat by one of the best players in history. Maybe the best.
It's just... It was the look.
So you're more tempted to tweak it.
Yeah, or
at least one more time.
I think you're fighting. I think you're a general fighting the last war. If you start cashing out and going for one guy,
thinking, with all of what he appears to bring,
yeah. Now he would be the best player probably who ever played for the Raptors, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, but I mean it's
he
wouldn't be here long enough unless he signs long term.
He's not going to be a scorer. Like he's a great defensive
player.
He's not necessarily a scorer, right? You're not getting 30 points a night out of him.
Mark Sacchino is here, and he's coming into studio, and we're going to tee up.
I have to correct something I said.
The Open Championship,
because for some reason Dave Poulin has the course book for Carnoustie here, and Justin Leonard double bogeyed 18, not 17.
There you go.
It was 18, not 17.
We don't know what Gord Miller is having for dinner, but I bet you. He orders it off of Skip the Dishes.
I have.
An Overdrive sponsor. Skip the Dishes delivers the food Gord wants from the restaurants Gord loves. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Mark Sacchino will yell at him. He joins us in studio. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes all week on Overdrive. Dave Poulin, Gord Miller. Co-hosting
today.
You had
to start with Mark right there.
Yeah, well, no, what are you doing?
I'm doing. There's a whole sponsor liner and everything.
You're kidding.
Whole sponsor liner and everything. I got Mark Sacchino, the co-host of Golf Talk Canada, here on TSN 1050. Watch it on TSN. He is in studio
as
with
we
us
do.
To get us set for the Open Championship.
We're in an uncolored shirt.
And our Golf Insider is brought to you by Subaru. Summer nights are made for Subaru with lease rates from 0.5% at your local Ontario Subaru dealer. Subaru, confidence in motion. Tiger, confidence in motion.
Gentlemen, first of all, thanks for having me. Good to see you all in person.
What's the t-shirt say? The
it's
players?
Like an old, it's like, you know, one of my favorite t-shirts, the old Ratty Players championship t-shirt. But, you know.
The fifth major.
The fifth major, yes. I love the Players. Well, that's a whole other conversation. We have to do a whole show just on the Players. Tiger. Tiger's one of the best cliches in all of golf right now, right? You can't win it on Thursday, but you can lose it on Thursday. And with the triple bogey to open up his U.S. Open from the center of the fairway on opening, he lost it on Thursday. So will he shoot himself out of the tournament on Thursday, or will he just have a nice, normal, positive yardage on the board on Thursday?
Expressing concern about the slow greens or something?
Well, typically in the Open Championship, we get the slowest greens of all the majors because from a condition standpoint, Mother Nature, with those winds and whatnot, you just can't have crazy speeds or they'd be unputtable if Mother Nature ever threw her hat into the ring. So, you know, on an annual basis, they typically are slower greens when it comes to majors. And Tiger traditionally has not been a great putter on slower greens, but he's got a mallet putter in the bag for the first time. So he's got a heavier, larger putter. It's not like he's putted great guys in majors since this recent comeback. Who knows? Maybe it helps him. I don't know.
He was a guy that always put lead tape on his putter when he went over to the British Open.
Yeah, every year loaded it up.
And maybe the greatest long putter of all time, he and Crenshaw. But at what point do we just say, you know, he's past the last exit?
Oh, well, we could probably have said that a couple of years ago.
But
he keeps, you know, he keeps teasing us on a Sunday. And obviously there's a difference between challenging at the Valspar and winning a major. You know, he hasn't top 10 in a major in 10 years, a top 10. It's been a long time. He won in, 2008 at Torrey Pines was the last time around. You know, he won five times in 13. That seems like ages ago, but did not do well in the majors that season. So, but I think I look at Tiger completely different this time. I look at him as a guy, I don't think the story is about health anymore, at least not right now. That's the good news. I think this is a huge mental hurdle, guys. I think he really looks to me like a guy trying to win again for the first time. He's contended at PGA Tour events. He's kind of learning his way back inside the ropes for four rounds. But anytime he's had an opportunity to strike this year, he's looked uncomfortable in his own skin. Yeah. And I think that gets heightened at majors.
Well, Zach, but if you were going to pick a venue for him, that experience, that it wasn't traditional golf, that it's going to be, to me, a Euro who plays in those conditions all the time, or a guy who's got unbelievable experience in winning in those conditions.
Not only would I say it's an Open Championship, I would say it's an Open Championship that's baked out and dry, similar to how he won in Hoy Lake, and St. Andrews.
You were just there.
Yes.
You were just over there. They're having one of the driest summers they've ever had.
It's insane. It's a parking lot. It's playing golf in a Walmart parking lot. You know, we could just go out here at TSN. We'll throw up some tee decks. I'll throw a flag at the other end of the parking lot, and we can simulate what Carnoustie's going to play, like, minus the pot bunkers. It's crazy. But from a Tiger standpoint, you don't have to hit driver. Your options around the green are whatever you like. You can bump it. You can putt it. So there's a lot of things kind of, you know, in Tiger's comfort zone, to your point, that not only with the Open Championship annually might be the one. This one, there's even more things going on that kind of point towards that.
I mean, Zach, don't.
I know we're teasing you, Scotty.
Don't underestimate those with bad backs. We are a resilient folk. All right, I'm just throwing it out there. You're saying it's like a parking lot. Some guys are hitting 400 yard drives with roll right now.
Yeah, I just had this chat. As I was walking through the newsroom on my way in, I think the over-under right now, like, if I would say, you know, what's the longest drive of the week? You got to put it somewhere 420, 430, and then take your over-under bets. You know, Dustin Johnson hit 450 into the burn in a practice round on 18. Like, this is absolutely insane, guys. You know, it's like if you're flying at 320 downwind, 330 downwind, get ready for 450.
So this is how it's changed. So in 1999... Justin Leonard went for the 18th with a 3-wood,
yeah,
right? His second shot.
Yeah, there you go.
And knocked it in the burn.
Right.
Right? Dustin Johnson is reaching that.
With his driver.
Off the tee. The other beef I have, by the way, with golf right now is the top three players in the world are Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Justin Rose. I got no shot. I got no shot.
A Rose and two
Thorns. You think you have no shot? I tried doing an hour on it.
Oh, my God.
Now, they're a Rose and two Thorns, Zach. You can steal all my lines. All my lines.
Very different players.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. Who do you mark as the favorite?
If I'm just talking about those three, I'll go with Justin Rose. And no disrespect to anyone, but I think the Americans have really dominated the spotlight in the majors and just the global golf stage in the last year or so. I think unless something changes come September, get ready for more stars and stripes at the Ryder Cup. But I think this is the major that Europe steals this year. I love John Rahm. I think he found something a couple of weeks ago at the Irish Open. I think he's ready to kind of get this year back on track. And I love England. It'd be an interesting bet right now if you could get the right odds. I mentioned it when we did our one-hour preview show today, which will air tomorrow. And I said to Weeksy, I said, Bob, I go, right now, if someone gave me 5-1, I'll take England and give you the rest of the world. When you consider you get Justin Rose, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood.
Wait, you're taking Britain and you get the United States?
No, yeah, you can have the U.S., I said to Bob. I want 5-1.
England or Britain?
I'll take England. Just not England. All of Great Britain, just wow. England. Just the St. George's Cross. I'll take 5. You got to give me 5-1. And I said, but he wouldn't bite. He
and
would
as
not
much
bite.
As the way they come up through the system and they have to grind it and it's not all perfect. And I'm laughing watching the show on Oklahoma State.
Yes.
That Ricky Fowler's
produced.
How they got that by the NCAA, I have no idea. But watching college freshmen get off their private jet to play at an absolutely perfect course speaks to how great.
And you were at Notre Dame, which is like the richest school in the world.
And then you're shocked at this.
Come on.
And I'm shocked at this, by the way. I'm shocked the NCAA let this happen.
At Notre Dame, that we didn't think of cigars that. With $100 bills.
Right.
So come on.
Right. And life's a little different on the European
but
tour.
But it is.
Right,
they grind their way up. And Justin Rose, a classic example. Yeah. I mean, he really ground his
You want to hear one
system.
Of the craziest stats you'll hear about Justin Rose. When you consider this guy's won a gold medal, he has won a U.S. Open, he has contended so often at majors, he's got a career at the Masters, missing everything but the win, right? He's got the seconds, he's got the thirds, he's got the second. His only career official top 10 at an Open Championship is his rookie debut as an amateur in 1998. 20 years ago. Now, has danced around the top 10, has played well last year, but not an official top 10. I think it was a 12th off the top of my head. I think he was 12 last year. To think that he has won top 10 in an Open Championship, you got to go back 20. That is just mind-boggling.
And then went miserably south after that for a long time.
But more than any other tournament, the Open Championship produces more random champions than any other, doesn't it?
Todd Hamilton, Ben Curtis. Usually, it wasn't Todd Hamilton's year, but typically, that is Mother Nature, right? And luck of the draw. And you get out, and a guy gets out on the right side of that draw and puts up a number, and then the end of the world arrives.
Well, that was Muirfield in 2002.
Right.
So this storm blew in on Saturday. That was biblical. They closed the airport, and again, Justin Leonard was staying down the street from us. He came back to his house. He was 45th, I think. He finished around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The storm came in. Woods, I think, shot 78 or something, and said it was one of the best rounds he ever played. And Justin Leonard, sitting in his living room, went from 45th to like 13th.
There you go. Right,
just sitting there, because this storm came in, and you, I mean.
And the difference between a U.S. Open and an Open Championship, instead of the tournament committee and Mike Davis making that happen by guys moving up a leaderboard in their living room, this is Mother Nature, right? This is the RNA just saying it's the Open Championship. This is what it's about. This is part of its identity, and we'll get out of the way. I don't think we have that this year.
Is this your favorite weekend of the year? On the golf calendar?
I love it all. I do love the timing. It's kind of like breakfast at Wimbledon, right? Yeah, I do love that.
With your morning coffee.
I do love that. But from a spectator standpoint, you know, it's hard to work the Masters these days. Very hard. But I do love the Masters. So I'm a Ryder Cup guy. I like Ryder Cup in Europe because you get that morning. And something about the Ryder Cup, it's taken on a life of its own in the last 20 years and just built to the point where, man, and every 2 years, I think, makes it a little bit more special kind of thing. But, yeah, listen, this is going to be great.
This is about a month old, Zach, but you and I haven't talked. I've been avoiding you.
And hard to blame you, really.
Yeah. You know, we talk in football season, go 49ers,
yes.
And we'll get to that in a bit. But the change in date for the Canadian Open coming up, how big a deal, how beneficial?
I don't want to make too big of a deal. I think people are getting too excited about this. I don't think it's going to change the universe, but I do think it's going to help. And I'm not so sure we'll know exactly how much it helps until the U.S. Open arrives back at Wingfoot in 2020 when it's back on an Eastern time zone. Next year, they're on the West Coast. They're at Pebble Beach, and we're asking players to jump from Hamilton to Monterey. And I'm not saying it's not going to help, because Hamilton's a great golf course, and certainly some players like to play the week before. For instance, Brooks Koepka and Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson were all playing in Memphis this year, the week before the U.S. Open. They would have never played, but they wanted to play into a U.S. Open as opposed to get the extra week of practice. So next year, I'm not so sure. I think 2020, when RBC and Golf Canada Canada announced the spot for the RBC Canadian Open in 2020, which will be in the Greater Toronto Area somewhere, I think that's the year where we'll go, wow, that maybe this is more important than we realized even last year, when the guys are making the jump from Toronto to New York and it's nothing and it's an easy scheduling thing for them. I think it could be very beneficial.
But would you, as organizers of the Canadian Open, pick a location that is within relative geographical distance of wherever the U.S. Open is going to be on that particular year, and we know that there's a cycle for
that. And there will then be the big debate, because leading up to this, all we've heard from Golf Canada is the Canadian Open is not leaving the GTA. You're lucky if you see it leave the Southern Ontario. If it moves more than once every 6-7 years, you're lucky. And it's really fiscally centered only. It leaves Toronto, it leaves the Southern Ontario, it takes a bath. Like, they just can't take the loss. Also, RBC's client base and you know, the financial hub of the country is Bay Street and downtown, and they don't want to move it. This might change some of that, especially, you know, considering RBC has a footprint and a presence in Calgary. There's Mickelson National out that way now, which is still kind of finding its own and what that's going to be. I don't know. It's something we got to keep our eye on, but I know it's not going to happen in the next 5 years.
Well, and RBC sponsors golfers like Dustin Johnson, right? That'll help.
It's part of their contract.
Part of the deal.
That's why the lineup has been so good.
By the way, you can't pay appearance money in golf.
Well, back doors, right?
That's the funny one. You can't pay appearance money in golf, but if RBC sponsors a guy to play in the RBC Open, then that's fine.
Yeah.
We got to let you go, but the theme of the last 24 hours in the world has been collusion. So I'm going to throw a question out there for you. No collusion, you and me.
Okay.
Tell these two, because they don't believe me, how great a golfer I am.
Unbelievable. I have not seen so many balls intentionally hit into backyards and pools like that. Your aim is incredible. I think they still won't let him back to Toronto. I'm a member over at the Toronto Hunt Club, so we get bordered like a lot of. Yeah, Scotty's not welcomed on the eastern border of the property.
I did a nosedive into the mashed potatoes in the clubhouse afterwards.
So here's the thing. Never the thing I learned a few years ago. Never get your name on your golf ball. So Nike gave me years ago golf balls with my name on them, and a guy called TSN in Oakville and said, "Hey, tell Gord Miller I want his ball back. I live at Glen Abbey, and it was in my pool."
That's great.
There you go. Yeah.
That is great.
All right, Zach, great to see you as always, my man.
All right, great. Enjoy the Open, guys. 1 o'clock tomorrow, Scotty. 1 hour preview show to kick off Open Week.
On TSN
TV.
And on the radio at 7 o'clock, yeah. Uncle Shawnee, tonight.
Our last Tuesday night before we go back to our
Saturday morning.
Bright and
early.
Thanks, guys.
All right, our Golf Insider, Mark Sacchino, brought to you by Subaru. Summer nights are made for Subaru with lease rates from 0.5% at your local Ontario Subaru dealer. Subaru. Confidence in motion. Former Blue Jays GM Gord Ash in the 6 o'clock hour.
Milwaukee's right in the middle of things. His club.
Interested. They were in the Manny Machado conversation. Although, right down to the end.
Sounds as though the Dodgers
going a little further west.
The Dodgers are kicking tires on that. The All-Star game, will it get played? The weather is iffy in Washington. And we got to talk about Bryce Harper's dad. He's a bit of a brick bleep house. Did you see him pitching to his kid?
He was fading at one point.
Yeah,
bad.
He was.
How old is he, though?
Well, Bryce is what, like 26? He could be as young as 50.
He's probably 46.
All right. We'll get into
You throw a and what else?
This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. But our buddy Dave Naylor, CFL on TSN Insider, football, Canadian Football Hall of Famer, letting us know on Twitter that Halifax Regional Council, I'm just going to read this straight up, Halifax Regional Council has directed the chief administrative officer and staff to pursue discussions with Maritime Football Limited Partnership in the province of Nova Scotia to explore opportunities and risks related to establishing a mixed-use development. A CFL franchise and stadium in Halifax Regional Municipality and return to Regional Council with recommendations.
And you know what that mixed-use development looks like?
Lands down in Ottawa.
Exactly. TD Place. What that's done for that area has been incredible.
So it's a destination.
It's a destination, not just on game nights. Because the problem with football, right, is you only have 9 regular season games. But it's for soccer, concerts, you name it, and even on off nights, all the entertainment district around it, the people living there in the condos, it makes
They've
a lot of sense.
Really done a nice job with it. Yeah, it has to have public transit, which it does, and
it makes sense for Halifax. They need a facility, something like that. I'm not huge on taxpayers paying for sports facilities, but
see, I have almost no familiarity with the Maritimes, in part because I've never been there, but could you attract...
You've never been to Atlantic Canada?
Oh, Gord, I'm not even going to get into I've traveled this country.
Come on, Scott.
I've been in 2 provinces, Ontario and Quebec. I've been all over the United States, I have hardly traveled Canada. I'm a disgrace. I got to get the tattoo of the flag.
Self-proclaimed disgrace. The East Coast is the best. The East Coast is great.
Atlantic Canada, not the Maritimes.
Okay, quickly to my point, can they attract people to come in on Saturdays or Sundays from New Brunswick, from PEI, like wherever? Or is it all Halifax?
Well, he doesn't have East Coast knowledge.
No, that's the question. No, you asked a good question. I mean, can you sustain a 27,000-seat stadium 9 times a year? Yes, but you'd have to do some gymnastics.
All right. Gord Ash, former Blue Jays GM.
And my neighbor.
And Gord's neighbor. A couple of Gords.
Yeah.
Neighboring. Overdrive, hour number 3. Starts now, TSN 1050.